if you were laid off tomorrow and had the option to do something different? What would that be? This week on Defining You, I'm resharing my interview with Portia Charles, attorney and principal at Charles Law Practice, who was laid off from a corporate job and was left to contend with the real issue of what's next. Should she get another job, or should she start the law firm she's been dreaming about for years? So if you're new or you might have missed this incredible episode, here's your chance to listen again. Listen as Portia recounts her incredible story. I think you'll get some real value out of this episode. And don't forget to like my Facebook page and follow me on Instagram at Helena J. Now for updates on new episodes coming soon. So stay tuned for the rebroadcast of my interview with attorney at law, Portia Charles. What would you do if you were laid off tomorrow? That's exactly the question that our guest Portia Charles faced. When she got laid off from her corporate job, she was left to grapple with the real issue of what's next. Should she get another job or start the law practice she had been dreaming about for years? Now, most of us think our jobs are safe until something happens that shakes our entire lives. Some of us get laid off unexpectedly, some of us experience harassment in the workplace, and some of us get passed up for promotions over and over again. What is the point when we say enough is enough? And if you had the option to do something different right now, what would that be? Listen as Portia Charles, attorney and principal at Charles Law Practice, recounts her story of choosing to follow her childhood dreams of being her own boss and carving her own path. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please head over to the review section and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps others find our show. And thank you for taking the time to do so. Now, here's my interview with attorney at law, Portia Charles. Hi, welcome to my podcast, Defining You. I'm your host, Helena J., MC, voiceover artist, and your courage builder. Now I'm going to invite women I find inspiring to come on to get vulnerable, share their incredible stories and successes with me. You will hear candid conversations about who they are and what they've had to overcome to achieve the life they have. Now, the goal of Defining You is really intended to show the impact of the human spirit and to assure you that you hold the power to uncover your purpose and who you are meant to become. My hope is that these lessons, profound insights, and shared experiences will encourage you to confront your own fear, follow your dream, and define the life you know in your heart is possible. Listen now for today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Defining You podcast. While getting ready for this episode, I realized that my guest and I have a few things in common. We're actually both from the Caribbean island of Dominica. We lived in the same community, attended the same high school, and migrated to the United States to pursue higher education. And guess what? We actually live in the same state. I don't know who's following who, but if I have to guess, I'll say Portia probably migrated to the United States way before me. But it's so funny that how our world brought us together again. Hi, Portia. Welcome.
Hello and good afternoon to you.
It is so nice to reconnect with you again, Portia. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you had a lot of cases that you were taking out care of this week, so I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and to share your story with us. So I like to start off by, you know, asking my guests to briefly tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Certainly. My name is Portia, and I'll say my middle name, Calpurnia Charles. Dad named me after a play, Shakespeare play. I currently live in Massachusetts. I have my own practice in law. The areas of practice is criminal law, immigration, and to a certain extent, I do some family law, a little bit selective. But for the most part, the bulk of my practice is in immigration and criminal law.
Criminal law. Great. You have three main areas that you practice.
Correct.
Great. What would you say is that thing that attracted you about law?
Well, if you speak to most of my classmates, people that I went to the grammar school with, you're one of them. I think most people sort of pegged me as an attorney when I was only about 12 years old. I think partly because of my personality, my ability to be articulate. I was always on one side or the other of an argument, never neutral. So I think just my personality is what sort of pegged me for this career. So I've known for a very long time that I always wanted to be a lawyer. So Everything that I've done up to this point has been to pursue that.
But as a young girl growing up, you said, you know, people always look at you and saw something in you. Was there a particular individual that you saw that made you think, this is something that I might be interested in later on in life?
Well, I think most of it boils down to my parents, because one of the things I'm in an island of Dominica. Parents have a very traditional style of raising children, correcting children, and children need to know their place, things of that sort. But one thing I've always prided my parents on is that they've always given me the ability to be able to disagree, to be able to say, hey, I don't agree because of. And they always gave me that open space to express myself. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably why I aligned myself with a profession like that, because my parents always gave me the opportunity, although I'm not an adult, but they gave me the opportunity to disagree and to challenge in a respectful way, obviously.
So your parents, you look up to your parents, and that kind of led you to where you are today.
Absolutely. So what
do you think were the biggest defining moments that landed you where you are today?
Well, when I first arrived in the United States, obviously my foremost goal was for higher education, of course.
Right.
I started going to college, but I was very fortunate earlier on to get a full-time professional job while I attended school. I worked for investment firm downtown Boston while I attended school full-time. And my experiences at that firm and the future places that I worked at in the same industry, the financial services industry, helped me realize that based on my race, maybe my nationality, I was not being exposed to the same opportunities or even being considered for the same opportunities that would allow me to progress in this company. So I had a role. I was patted on my back. Great job, Portia. However, when it come time for me to be a director or vice president or assistant vice president, I was always passed over for those roles. Mm-hmm. So the last straw was the last job that I had. I worked at another financial company in the Back Bay area in Boston. And I was experiencing the same things that I experienced in the other companies, a lack of opportunity. I was doing a great job, but never getting that upward mobility that I was looking for. And right about the same time, I passed my bar exam. And obviously, I always wanted to be a lawyer, and not the lawyer that sits at the desk, but the lawyer that's actually given the opportunity to articulate positions, to advocate for people. I always wanted to do that. And my job in corporate America didn't really allow me to do that. But at the same time, I wasn't able to act in the capacity as a lawyer at those jobs. I worked as a compliance analyst, senior compliance analyst, but never went further than that particular title. Mm-hmm. So I was laid off at that job, and that was the opportunity that I had to kind of grab a hold of and say, listen, now is the time to make the move. Very frightening, but now is the time to make the move. So that's what I did.
Excellent. So I want to just touch a little bit on what you said about not being afforded the opportunities that some of your colleagues were getting, and not that you were not qualified, but experiencing Any kind of discrimination can be discouraging for anyone. What was that experience like for you? Did you have anyone in the company that you felt like you could talk to about your abilities? And, you know, just tell us about some of those experiences.
Well, the first thing I'd say is for a person of my background, having migrated from a small island in the Caribbean, not only do I have to worry about how people perceive me because of my race, but also because of my nationality is also a big deal as well, because there are nuances like your accent. How you pronounce words and how you come across to other people. So I had essentially, and I'm a woman. So there's like three whammies essentially that I have to deal with in terms of adversity. But I never really found that there was anyone I could speak to at those companies. So I essentially had to self-motivate and remind myself that I'm worthy, remind myself that I'm educated. I may sound different, pronounce words different, but at the end of the day, I have the knowledge and that whatever I have in my brain, whatever I have up there, no one can take it away from me. So that's essentially how I motivated myself, because at some points it seemed a little depressing when you look at others. Sometimes you may be more educated than they are. You may be maybe more creative. Even sometimes I would make suggestions to improve processes that, you know, they've never done. However, Portia Charles is not mentioned or looked over, or there's some excuse or the other why I'm not able to get the role. So I had to continue to self-motivate. Had it not been for, again, friends who feel the same way. And again, back to my parents, who always tell me and always continue to tell me that I'm amazing, that you're educated, you're smart, and you can do whatever you want to do. And, and that's what I held on to, knowing that in the future, it will not always be that way.
Right.
And that I'm not going to be in corporate America forever. It's just a means to an end.
Right. And it's interesting that you mentioned the thing about not only being from a different country, but you have to also be aware of things like accent. And I can even give you a story about accent, because, as you know, when I left Dominica, I also worked in broadcasting. I came up here and I also continued my education in that same industry. And after graduation, you know, the opportunities were plenty. And then I had an interview at a radio station, 94.5, you know, that station. And I had everything. But the only thing that kept me back, she said, I don't know what to do with you because of my accent. So I clearly understand where you're coming from. So because of your experience, I think there are some things that you can probably share with the audience in terms of, you know, what are some of the things you think people can do? What would be your advice for someone else who is going through something similar?
Well, juxtapose with corporate America, I would say that the best way to achieve success is to start your own business. No other way around it. We hope that there would be more progress by now, and we always hope that people would look at you based on your abilities, but we haven't made a lot of progress in that regard. There's still the notion that Black women, Black people on a whole, are not given executive positions for some reason or the other. So if you are the type of person that feel like you have potential, you have the education, you have the desire, you have to start your own business in order to get those the experiences that you're looking for. And I came to that realization when I was laid off from my last corporate job, and I made it happen then.
Mm-hmm. So I know you were laid off, but during that period, what was your biggest fear when that happened?
So there's a couple of things. I'll tell you the pros and the cons. So one of the pros, I'll say the pros first and say the cons afterwards. One of the pros of starting the type of practice that I'm starting, you don't have the challenge of finding financing or finding you have to get multiple licenses. Some businesses can be very complicated to start. So it all varies. It depends on the type of business you're looking to start. But when you're in the service industry that requires some type of knowledge or some type of license, whether it's a therapist or an attorney, all you need really is access to the internet, your phone or computer, and your brain.
Right.
So that part was all set. I didn't have an issue with that. But part of the challenge of starting a new business, especially as a new attorney, you haven't established a reputation as yet. So you have to figure out a way of being able to support yourself so you're not drawn back into looking for another job, because
right.
that's essentially what happens. And there goes your business. The business idea fails because you're not able to sustain yourself financially. So that was one of my fears. In the beginning years, I was very tempted to go back into corporate America because it's easy to get a six-figure job and pay all your bills and be happy. But however, in order for you to have a business grow and in order for the business to succeed, you have to take certain chances.
And absolutely.
You can't have one foot in, one foot out. You have to have both feet in. So at some point, I deleted my Monster account. I deleted all the accounts where people look for jobs. I'm like, I'm not looking for another job. This is what I'm going to do. By the hook or by the crook, this is what I'm going to do. And I can't really complain. I started in 2013 and fast forward to 2022. And I have to say it's been a great ride with some challenges, of course, that is synonymous with owning your own business. But for the most part, it's rewarding.
Wonderful. So if you had to start all over again, what would you do differently knowing what you know now?
Well, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't have waited as long to start my business. Again, part of the reason why it took so long is the fear of what if I start my own business, I'm not able to maintain my lifestyle, maintain the income that I'm accustomed to. So that's the fear that you have, that you're not going to be able to make the same income or surpass that income. And you have to make certain adjustments in your life to, you know, to accommodate that. So that's the greatest fear. So what I would have done differently is start my business sooner than mm-hmm. I did. I shouldn't have waited for the company to lay me off before I started my business. It should have been something that should have been done a while back, but mm-hmm. better late than never, right?
Right. So as someone who's been there, done that, and clearly your business is doing well, what advice would you have for women who are listening right now and are thinking of starting their own business or even law practice and have those fears that you just talked about?
Well, the first thing I would say, there needs to be some self-introspection. You have to believe in yourself. If you're not buying it, nobody else is going to buy it. So mm-hmm. the first thing is you have to believe in your abilities. You have to believe that you can serve your demographics or who you're looking to serve. You have to essentially figure out what areas you're interested in and be very good at it. Not just average, but be very good at it. Not be the jack of all trades, but select one or two, maybe three at the most practice areas and become very good at it. So that's what I would suggest. Then in addition to that, I think it's very important as an attorney to have colleagues that you can bounce ideas off. No one attorney knows everything. No mm-hmm. one attorney have seen every type of scenario. So it's good to have people who've practiced before that may have experience with a particular judge. They have motions that they can share with you. That way you're not constantly reinventing the wheel. Because part of the challenge of being a new attorney is having to start everything from scratch.
Right.
And obviously that dips into your ability to make money, because if you're taking 5 hours to do something that generally would take an attorney of experience half an hour, that's 4.5 hours of billable time that you can't get back. So I would say surround yourself with other attorneys that know what they're doing so you can learn from them, and obviously show the initiative and teach yourself as well.
So why don't you share some of your process in terms of when you started your business? You said you were a new attorney and you had to navigate around the industry. Who were some of the folks that helped you along the way, and how has that impacted your life?
Well, first and foremost, the very first thing I did was join a variety of bar associations. Because joining the bar associations give you the opportunity to introduce yourself to other mm-hmm. attorneys, find attorneys that have the same interests, that may have the same idea. Some attorneys also have solo practices. There's also certain attorneys that belong to certain bars that also have a solo practice, and they exchange ideas and There's listservs where they ask questions of each other and support each other in that regard. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I found very useful, is to join the bar associations. They usually give you a break at the beginning where you're not expected to pay a fee.
Right.
So it's a good opportunity to sort of get that type of exposure and the opportunity to interact with other attorneys for free. So that's how I started. And then there's one particular person that I knew from way back when in corporate America who also went away to law school. And she introduced me to a program called Bar Advocates, which is in every county, where private attorneys sign up. They're able to get court-appointed cases where they're paid by the state, but they don't work for the state.
Right.
So essentially, you're a contractor, and the state pays private attorneys to take those cases.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, because of my networking and the fact that I kept in touch with people that I've worked with, she was able to recommend me for that panel and offered to help me, although I'd never practiced criminal law before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got on that panel. And obviously, with that panel, you get clients and you start building your reputation. So that's how it all began.
So you build relationships and continue to make connections and join organizations so that you can meet like-minded people. One of the things I wanted to talk on right now is if we can go into what kinds of law that you do and what are some of the work that you are doing right now?
Well, absolutely. I would say I like criminal law the most because criminal law gives me the opportunity to talk, which I like to do. Unlike immigration court, there's some talking involved, but most of the advocacy is through writing, which I also like, but I prefer to speak. Criminal law gives you the opportunity to advocate before a judge for various things, whether it's motion practice, trying to prevent someone from getting detained, a full-blown trial, trying to prevent someone from being sentenced to prison. So those are the type of things that you do when you're a criminal attorney. So you get real life experience advocating and being able to articulate and think on the spot. In many instances, sometimes you don't know if your client is being detained and you're told on the fly, hey, they're looking to hold your client, and you have to articulate the bail argument pretty much on the spot. So it almost seems like you're prepared, but you're not.
It's right.
A skill that you learn over time, but
I actually laughed because I think that's probably right up your alley.
Yes, absolutely.
I see your commentary on Facebook often about some of the tough things that are happening in our world today. So I can clearly see you enjoying yourself and just really showing your skills in those areas. What are some of the most challenging things for you when you are practicing criminal law?
Well, some of the challenging things I would say is whenever you have a client, and just based on your life experience, after speaking with your client, you're convinced that they were wrongly accused, and the fear of, I mean, they could get a guilty regardless of whether or not they're innocent, because the guilt or innocence is based on whatever the jurors believe. So if the jurors don't believe your client, they could find them guilty when in fact they are not. So that's my greatest fear and challenge in practicing criminal law, that I have to be honest with clients and let them know that while I think you may have a strong case, a great case, you have a great defense, but there's no guarantees. Ultimately, when you take a chance and go to trial, there's always a chance that you could be found guilty. And you have to be honest with your clients. So that's the biggest challenge, I would say, in practicing criminal law.
Right. How about immigration?
Well, immigration, I think, is the most challenging of them all, because immigration revolves around something very personal. It revolves around someone's ability to be legitimate in a country, have the ability to work, to support their children, and even support their families back in the island. And not having immigration status could really put a crimp in that plan. So people vest a lot and expect a lot in terms of immigration. Immigration practice, though, is separated into two areas. One area is where it's sort of like affirmative, where you file applications for people, whether it's an application based on marriage, an application based on family relationships. You file the petitions, there's interviews, people get their green cards, and you keep it moving. The part that's most challenging in immigration is the part where people are facing deportation when they find themselves in removal proceedings. And they've lived 15, 20 years in the United States. They've built a life here. They're no longer affiliated or accustomed to their home country. Sometimes, you know, some of these kids arrive in the United States at 3 years old, 4 years old, and then all they speak is English. And right. if they're removed to Brazil or a country that speaks another language, then they have a challenge there. So that's the most challenging thing about that. It almost seems like a human rights issue to me. Someone can just be removed from a place that they've
known all their lives. Yeah,
absolutely. Challenging aspect of the immigration practice is removal proceedings.
You know, immigration is something that is, as an immigrant, immigration is something that is, we are all very close to. We may know somebody who's experiencing something, or a friend or a family. What are some of the cases that you've dealt with as far as immigration is concerned? And tell us your process. And was there anyone you worked with that you were able to successfully get help for that client?
Absolutely. A lot come to mind when I think of people that I've helped. I'll give you two examples. One example is a removal case. I met this young man. He was 24 years old from Cape Verde. He had never been in trouble before. And all of a sudden, he was wrapped up into two criminal cases. One, he was swept up in a warrant where police executed a search warrant, and he just happened to be there and got caught up in that warrant and was charged with drug distribution. And then the second one, where he just happened to visit several months later, the same location, and the police again arrested him and suggested that that's where you live, and also executed a search warrant, this time with him as the target of the warrant, and charged him with the same crime. Now, this young man was given a court-appointed attorney who had no knowledge or even cared to know what the immigration consequences of serious charges like that, how it would affect someone's legal status.
Right.
The young man had a green card, and his entire family had immigrated from Cape Verde, and they all live in the United States. So he had no family in Cape Verde. So essentially, based on those charges, drug distribution is considered an aggravated felony, and you have absolutely no options for relief when you're charged with a crime, a serious crime of that sort. He had pled guilty to both crimes based on the advice of counsel, and essentially went to jail, and was picked up on the street by immigration and customs enforcement when he was released while going to the post office with his girlfriend. So now they were prepared to deport him, and with no options. He was about to lose his green card and be sent back to a country where he knows no one.
Carrie.
So I was able to think on my feet, and I asked the judge for only 2 weeks. I said, "Judge, can I get 2 weeks so I can speak with my client to possibly explore convention against torture?" Because that's essentially the only option he has. And the judge says, "I'm giving you only 2 weeks, Attorney Charles, 2 weeks. Well, I made magic happen in that 2 weeks. I went all the way to the court, filed a motion to vacate conviction based on the fact that my client was not aware of the immigration consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Had he known, he would have gone to trial.
Wow.
One of the cases could have been disposed of by a motion to dismiss, seeing that mere presence in a place where search warrant is executed is not sufficient for a person to be charged with drug distribution without any other evidence. So I filed the motions, and we were very successful with the motion. So in 2 weeks, I returned back to the immigration court, and I was able to stop the deportation. So that's one of my favorite moments. My client said, "You saved my life," essentially. So I felt really great about that.
And just quickly,
the second one was a situation where a couple was in a legit marriage, but didn't have a lot of information to produce to immigration. I didn't represent them in the initial stages, and they had gone to the interview. The husband was a veteran and had some mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
The interview didn't go very well. There was just small discrepancies that could have easily been explained. However, they intended to deny the application and sent a notice of intent to deny. Generally, my process with these types of issues, most attorneys would just write a letter and try to address it. I usually respond brief style And by brief style, I mean articulate the facts, but also give some legal arguments as well and do exhibits and make it like a well thought out argument. So I did that on their behalf. And although they intended to deny it, they ended up approving the application. So that was very exciting for me. So I get a lot of those wins. For the most part in immigration, I get mostly wins, but it's very comforting to know that, you know, you've made somebody's life better. So
Wow, those are some good, very good success stories. So I want to go back and ask you, because you sound like you're doing really well today, but when you started practicing, what was your first case like? And did you have any trepidations of facing the judge? I know you're not a shy person, but the first day, can you tell us about that experience?
Well, the very first day was when I joined a panel and I had my very first duty day. And surprisingly, what my friends knew all along and what I knew all along, this was just a natural thing for me. So you'll probably find this funny, but my very first case that I was appointed to, my client was charged with assault and battery of a dangerous weapon. And the dangerous weapon was a bottle of lotion. My client had gotten into a fight with her boyfriend and she threw a bottle of lotion after
bottle of lotion. Okay.
Yes. He called the police. She was charged with assault with a dangerous weapon. The district attorney was asking for a $500 bail. But as you know, when people are indigent and don't have a lot of resources, even a nominal bail of $50 is hard for them to post. I was able to make an argument for my very first time thinking on my feet, and the judge released her on personal recognizance. I was so excited. I couldn't understand myself. And then later on in the day, the judge had his clerk approach me and ask me, "Are you sure you haven't practiced criminal law before?" And I said, "Absolutely not. This is my first day." They couldn't believe it. But I guess it's just a natural progression. I was so excited that day. I was able to not let her go to jail. So I was excited about that.
So that's another win. Wonderful. Yes. Great job. But people that know you wouldn't be surprised, because you know how to make an argument. You know how to win an argument. And I think you're also a great writer, and I think you're very persuasive. So I think law suits you really, absolutely, really well. Can we talk about the other area of law that you're practicing?
Yeah. So the other area that I don't engage in as much is family law. And the reason why I do family law and I'm very successful at family law is I do have a master's degree in conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those skills that are very useful in family court cases. When two parties are as far apart as you can imagine, and to get them to agree because it's in the best interest of their children is one of the challenging aspects of it. So I'm very selective with my cases because as you can just assume or infer, that family law cases invoke a lot of emotions and it's very personal. So I try not to take too many of those. But when I do get involved, those are the types of things that I try to do, is to get people to agree in such a way that both parties can feel like they won. And at the end of the day, it benefits their children and benefits the co-parenting relationship in the long run.
Maybe you can help us, give us a little background on immigration. I want to go back to this because I know this is an area that affects a lot of people. And is it a lucrative area of law? And because I know for someone like you, you got into this because you really care and want to make an impact and help people. But there are some attorneys who will get into the field not because of helping people, but what they can acquire from law. Do you come across attorneys who are representing people, but not really representing them, but their goal is to get a paycheck? And as opposed to someone like you, what advice would you give people who are thinking of trying to get into law? What are some of the things, the key attributes you think that would be helpful? Because if you care and you want to make an impact in the community, what are some of the things you would suggest to those who are thinking of going into law?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, I come across a lot of attorneys that are just in it for the paycheck.
I could imagine.
And 9 out of 10 times when a client comes to me, it's because they've already had an experience with one of those attorneys and need a new attorney to address their concerns. Mm-hmm. And it's very sad because immigration is a lucrative area of practice because the laws, you know, although they're old, but there's nuances and it's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it makes it difficult for a lot of attorneys to keep abreast of the law. And keep in mind, if you don't care, you're not going to keep abreast of the law because you're just in it for a paycheck.
Yeah.
So I think the most effective immigration attorneys are the ones who've probably had an immigration experience. At the very least, if you haven't had the immigration experience, but you're intimately connected with someone who has. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes people a great immigration attorney. Because I think to be a great immigration attorney, you don't just pick the easy cases, because most people like the easy applications, you know, husband and wife, you know, husband is a U.S. citizen, wife has no criminal record. Those are easy cases, you know, you make a great paycheck taking mm-hmm. those types of cases. What about the cases that are more challenging, where one person may have a criminal record, where, you know, there's a situation where they don't have enough evidence and you have to get creative to prove that it's a legitimate marriage, those types of cases. I tend to get a lot of difficult cases because most people come to me when they've hired lawyers who refuse to go above and beyond or get creative or think outside the box and pretty much give up on their cases and they need somebody else to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. That's when they get to me.
What would you say are some of the things that people need to know, especially when they get in trouble and find themselves in immigration custody? Because one of the things that is most fearful, I would think, for people is a fear of being sent back home, a fear of being thrown in jail and not actually knowing your rights. What are some of the key things that people need to know?
Well, I think if someone has been living in the United States for a long time, they should. The information is online. We have a wealth of information online of what your options are if you find yourself in removal proceedings. And the majority of people that may have options is people who've been here the longest. I'll give you a quick example. For instance, if you've been in the United States for about 20 years, you haven't gotten in any trouble, your mother might be a U.S. citizen, or you might have U.S. citizen children. Then if you find yourself in removal proceedings, you can apply for something called cancellation of removal. And essentially the hardship would be to your U.S. citizen children. And if you're able to prove that, maybe your kids might be on IEPs. They may have some developmental delays. They might have some medical issues and that you're required to remain in the United States in order to see that through. So that's an option. Also, one of the things that most people don't know about that more people are becoming used to now, there's one area called special immigrant juvenile. Whenever a child comes to the United States with one parent and the other parent doesn't support them or pretty much in effect abandons them, there's something they can apply for called special immigrant juvenile. They have to get a designation from a family court that says that they're dependent on the court because of their age. They have to be under 21 years of age and essentially file paperwork with immigration once they get the designation from family court and say, hey, I'm a special immigrant juvenile. One parent has abandoned me and there's no hopes of reconciliation. And that particular child can pursue a green card in that way and be mm-hmm. able to go to school and have a life in the United States. So these are things that people should learn about what options are available when you're in deportation proceedings. So if, God forbid, they find themselves in that situation, they will have some comfort knowing that there's some options they can explore mm-hmm. when they find themselves in that situation.
Do you find in your practice, do you see a lot of women who look like you doing that kind of work?
Well, that's one of the challenges. Actually, on the panel where I do some of my court-appointed work, because I have a whole slew of private cases as well, but I still do the court-appointed work because that's my way of continuing to help indigent people. Because a lot of people will get a court-appointed attorney and, you know, it's not as lucrative. So therefore, they don't get the best representation. As you know, that money buys the mm-hmm. best lawyers. So I try to give my court-appointed clients the same vigor and the same drive that I give to paying clients. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is that there's not a lot of people that look like me when I have duty days on at the courthouse. There are some attorneys that probably practice in other areas, but I would say I don't find there's a lot of attorneys that do work in criminal courts representing the indigent. I find myself on my own island significant amounts of times when I go to the district courts and the superior courts around the state of Massachusetts.
So we definitely need more Black and Brown attorneys.
Absolutely.
Practicing in those areas.
Absolutely.
You talk about a lot about earlier about your challenges. You talk about some of the things that happened along the way. But what would you say is the most rewarding thing to you about practicing law?
Well, there's two things. Practicing law and having my own business, the most rewarding thing is I can make time for my child, particularly now that he's in high school, some of the most important and formative years in his life.
Yeah.
I have the flexibility to decide, you know what, I'm not working today, and I can do whatever I need to do to address whatever he needs to address. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the flexibilities of owning your own business is one of the most rewarding things because I'm able to be there for my son as he grows up and give him guidance and whatever he needs. One of the other things I think that's rewarding is when you're confident and you're very good at what you do, especially in the area of law, you build a good reputation. So that's how you generate business and you earn a very good living practicing law. So that's also rewarding. And then the last thing I would say is that when people show you respect, which you never got before, it's one of the most rewarding things ever. I've had a client sort of embarrass me in the hallway and said, "You're the best lawyer I ever had." And she doesn't know how much that meant to me. And she gave me a gift in the hallway with all my colleagues like staring on.
And that's an embarrassment?
My cheeks got a little red because, you know, it brought a little bit too much attention that I don't necessarily like. But it's a good feeling when people appreciate what you've done for them. And in her particular case, she has a mental illness. She had racked up 3 criminal cases, and which most certainly would have landed her in jail. And I was able to do a sentencing memo, get her the mental health she needs, as opposed to going to jail. And she was able to get a probationary period as opposed to a sentence in prison. So she was very, very thankful for that and did turn her life around, was no longer homeless and able to address mental health issues. So that's one of the rewarding parts is when people get results and they're happy about it.
Nice. So I think that was her way of showing, you know, her appreciation, because if you were not there to help give her those opportunities, who knows where she would have ended up.
Absolutely.
So for parents or for young girls or for women who are listening to this podcast right now, they're looking for mentors. They know what they want to do, but they don't know how to go about doing it. And again, I like to talk about this podcast is really about empowering women and inspiring them and showing them some of the things that they can do to overcome fear, to actually take the step forward to do what they like. And things I want to, you know, ask is there, if someone wanted to reach out to you and they were looking to shadow you or looking for a mentor, how can people reach you?
Well, certainly I do have a website, but I can certainly leave my business cell phone. It's 617-990-6792. My website is childslawpractice.com. And I can also be reached on social media as well. I do have a Facebook account and a Twitter account, so I can be reached that way. But I have a presence online. It should be easy to contact. Mm-hmm. And just so your listeners know, there's a lot of attorneys out there and professionals who are willing to provide guidance for people who want to follow along. But one of the first steps, you have to be bold. When you want success, you can't afford to be timid. So that's part of the personality adjustment that a lot of people have to make in order for them to get to where they need to get. Sometimes even cold calling or cold emailing someone from a big firm and say, "Hey, I've seen you at the courthouse. I'm very impressed with the way you cross-examine an expert witness. I'd really like to learn from you." You might be surprised that their response might actually be positive. So never just think that, you know, it's impossible that these people might want to help you. When you want something, you really have to go after it. You have to reach out, send emails. And most importantly, you have to network. Anytime you have an opportunity to socialize or be in proximity to other professionals, especially in the beginning, take the opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's where you're going to get the avenues for you to get to where you need to be and make the right connections.
Absolutely. You made a very good point. There is no room for being shy if you want to be a lawyer. So if you're shy, I think you probably want to take some steps to work on that and work Absolutely. With people who can help you to get to a point where you can overcome that shyness or whatever that fear might be that is holding you back. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you would like to speak on?
Well, the only thing foremost in my mind is that this is something that anybody can do if they want to. Nothing mm-hmm. is insurmountable. Again, part of it is we're not always born with the ability to articulate. Most of the skills you learn as a lawyer, they learn skills. So sometimes people might say, like even my son would say, Mom, what am I going to say when I go to court? I don't know what to say. But you know what? This is a skill you can work on. Being articulate sometimes might come naturally to some people. For mm-hmm. other people, it's a work in progress, but it's doable. So just because you're not naturally a talkative person or not naturally a person that likes to argue or debate doesn't necessarily mean that you won't make an excellent attorney. Most of the skill sets are learned skill sets. So if, mm-hmm. if this is something that you're interested in and you think you can make a difference, all those skills can be learned.
Absolutely.
So don't be discouraged.
Mm-hmm. So what is the next big thing for you and your law firm?
Well, for me, I know the next big thing for me is for me to learn languages. I've always wanted to learn languages for as long as I can remember. And my husband speaks 6 languages.
Oh, wow.
So that's my next challenge. I can't have anybody in my house that knows more than me, right?
Well, I think you're in good company. The next thing is to learn languages. And if that's your husband right. knows 7 languages, that's where you start. So yeah, I think
absolutely.
You...
I may not get to 7, but at least the one that would interest me the most is Spanish and Portuguese. I have a lot of clients who speak Portuguese and a lot of clients that speak Spanish. So those would be the 2 that I would be interested in. So that's my next big thing. I'd like to focus on trying to learn languages.
So right now, how do you navigate when you have to work with some of your clients who do not speak the language?
So that's where my husband comes in. He does assist me with the Spanish speaking, Portuguese speaking, and French speaking clients. And he does speak Italian and some other languages, but I haven't found a lot of Italian speakers in my practice. It's mostly Portuguese and Spanish. Those are the foremost languages. So it's very useful in that I can interact with them at the jails, on the phone, and when they come to the office for consultations. So it's very useful to have the language skills, because one of the things that makes you successful too, if anybody's thinking of being an attorney, if you're bilingual, it makes you extra special, because mm-hmm. especially in the area of immigration, mm-hmm. that's where language skills come into play. And if you're an attorney that speaks Portuguese or Spanish, can you imagine the wealth of clients that you'll be able to have that
yes.
the average attorney will not be able to speak with? Because most mm-hmm. people, it's easier for them to work with an attorney that speaks their language, because things can get lost in translation.
Excellent. So I think you made a great choice with your husband, if I may say so myself.
Something.
You definitely are. Well, Portia, you sound very well versed on your areas of law, and I just want to wish you the very best as you continue to help those who need the kind of services that you provide the most.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity.
Anytime. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard today and know someone else who wants to discover their own path and do what they love by learning from those who've been there, please share this episode with them. And you can send me a DM and let me know what really resonated with you. You can find me on Instagram or Facebook at Helena J Now, or search Defining You with Helena J wherever you get your podcast, and hit follow or subscribe for new episodes. Until we meet again, remember, go for what you want. It's already inside of you. Helena J, thank you so much for your support. I hope you enjoy defining you.